And welcome, everyone, to Here We Stand. It's April 19th. I'm your host, Kevin Annett, Eagle Strong Voice. April 19th, that was a song of the Green Mountain Boys from Vermont who really sparked the American Revolution, even before Lexington and Concord. But 245 years ago today, folks, the first shots were fired at Lexington and Concord, the shot heard around the world. And we, all of us, in the growing human resistance to this corporate tyranny, we are uttering in our own ways, our own shots heard around the world. This is the voice of the resistance. We are here every Sunday, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern on the BBS Radio Network. And with me today is my co-host, Deb Golding. Welcome, Deb.
Hi there. It's great to be here.
Yes, and it's always good to be together. And I am really encouraged this last week. We've had reports coming in, and I've attended gatherings of people, quite a number of people who are beginning to talk now about what we can do to resist the global tyranny, because the war is upon us. And it's time for us to face our fears, transcend them, and first recognize the value of our liberty and independence. You know, Deb, I've got this great quote. There's a couple of them. One of the commander of the Concord militia who fired the shots at the British, Captain John Parker, said, "If they mean to have a war, let it begin here." And Thomas Paine in Common Sense the next year said, "If there is to be trouble, let it be in our time so that our children may know peace." I love that.
I love that too. I mean, because I can relate to that, and I feel like many of us can. You know, I would love to see that for those who I know and love, my children and my grandchildren, and on that way.
Well, and that's really, you know, in all of the work we've been doing for so many years, defending the rights of children, exposing genocide, I think, and one of the things I want to get into today with you, Deb, is how this is a continuum. What we're seeing now is not simply a bunch of billionaire fat cats wanting to make a mega bucks off, you know, their latest vaccine conveniently produced to, you know, in response to this whole thing. It isn't about that. It's a continuum of genocide that's been going on for a long time. And, you know, we've documented it to a large degree in Canada. Other people have around the world, but the point is this is the next step in this. And the example I'd like to use is if you're an Indian in Canada for over a century, you have not been able to refuse medical treatment. If they want to come into the reservation and stick a needle in your arm, you go to jail if you refuse. Well, now people are worried that the same thing is happening to us, but folks, it's been going on to other people for a long time. It just hasn't affected us yet. So we need to keep that in mind, that this is just carrying on from what's our, you know, we live in a blood-soaked criminal system, folks. So why should we be surprised? Not only why shouldn't we be surprised, but why should we trust the words of a corrupt genocidal system? Health Canada that's pushing these vaccines, you know, and is talking about quarantining people. They're the very same agency that murdered generations of Native children in their Indian hospitals, sterilized them. I mean, we're really going to trust these agencies? So let me throw that out there, Deb, and, you know, for your initial thoughts about any of that.
Well, you know, it's actually my initial thought is thank you for putting that, you know, that cog in the wheel that maybe people haven't had the perspective to look at. Taking a step back and actually giving out the information, like really forming it the way you just did and saying this has been going on. And it's possible that people have listened to you and they're like, yes, that, you know, the atrocities, but really what you have been bringing out over the years that you have been, you know, really bringing this out isn't just one, you know, like I don't see it as a single vision. It really is. This is happening, and they're finding, and this is, you know, it happened to me, you know, that this continuum is a continuum because they have found that the experiments that they did in the Indian schools, the experiments that were done on me, the torture that was done in the Indian schools, the torture that's done in me, and in a religious, framework, they worked. Yeah. It worked. They were able to look at this and say, these aspects work. This experiment worked. You know, how far can we push the human person, the human being in these particular situations? And what can we just pass as laws, or what can we do to distract people away from anything other than what we're doing. And so it's been fairly carefully crafted, I would say. And we've been we as humans are very practical and very concerned about our own self-preservation. So we draw it in, and we've been kind of on our own hamster wheels of just living our lives while they've gone ahead and they have observed all of that. And so, yeah, this continuum, it's not a surprise that it is now. It's not that it's turning all of a sudden on us because we haven't, like, you know, done something about it. It's been part of the natural, you know, infection, the natural course of action that has been a plan and the agenda that has been rolling forward for a really long time.
Yes, and for listeners who are tuning in for the – I just want to get a note for people tuning in for the first time. You're referring to your being raised in the Mormon church and the experiments and torture done to you as a young child. And if folks want to look at that and other evidence about the genocide we've been referring to, it's all documented online, murderbydecree.com. Just go in there to the archives. You'll see everything we're talking about. Carry on, Deb.
Yeah, no, I was just thinking about, I mean, as we're looking at these agendas, there's a couple, I mean, there's a lot that we will be talking about over the next hour about where this is, you know, where this is right now, and not in the spirit of hashing it out and, you know, like really trying to talk tiredly to it, but, you know, really kind of bring in some different viewpoints, different perspectives. And what you just noted is one of those different perspectives. This didn't just suddenly happen. This has been planned, and this is a continuum. And I think that that's great. I mean, that you brought that out, that's what this is. So the question that I have that you've noticed is, you know, how have they been preparing people for where they're headed, what you're seeing? You know, what have you noticed that they have been doing to prepare people for this? Have it just keep continuing on the continuum?
Well, yeah, it's, I mean, kind of an immediate sense. I think it's pretty obvious over the last few years, the massive confusion being engendered in the population, pitting people against each other over issues like gender identification, all of this designed to wear down our natural solidarity as human beings with one another. Someone mentioned, observed the other day, that the 6-foot quarantine around people has no medical basis because it's not even airborne. What it is, is the military requires that people be at least 6 feet apart for them to be there, for their cell phones to be individually monitored, because if you get too close, the signals get mixed up. And so you have to have people that distant apart if they're all to be individually monitored and eventually controlled through one of the agendas. I'm not saying this is the only one, but one of them is to definitely microchip the population with what's called an ID 2020, that is biometric microchipped ID to follow everybody. That's in fact what COVID stands for, covert identification. They threw in the 19 as padding to make it look like it's a medical term, but no, it's their term for covertly chipping the whole planet. And this is all being talked about. Bill Gates talks about it openly, and he's the biggest war criminal right now. He's the one who needs to be put under house arrest for the crimes he's conducting against humanity, but that's a whole other issue. But that kind of leads into, you know, in the longer view, of course, we're raised in a society that doesn't understand what freedom is. We've never been even given ourselves the right to practice it. And that's why, you know, I mentioned earlier the Lexington and Concord, and, you know, reading the accounts of the British being attacked on all sides by all the ordinary citizens. I mean, there's even an account of a British officer described all these people were taking shots at his men. An elderly lady was throwing pots out the window at these British soldiers going by. So they go in and bayonet the woman to death. But even right to the very end, this 80-year-old woman is fighting them and tossing things at them. I mean, that sense of fighting to the end for your liberty and it being more important than your own life, that's something that a lot of us don't have, because look what we're raised in. You know, parental, you know, cannot offend the parental figure, whether it's a parent, a teacher, a boss, politician, a pope, whoever. And we're all programmed that way, and yet some of us don't take to it naturally. And I want to get into that today about how what we're facing is not just a physical but a spiritual engagement and a spiritual battle.
Exactly. Yeah, because it is, exactly. It is very much, it's a holistic battle. It's a holistic experience that is being addressed. And if we think it's only on one front, if people are really just thinking this is just purely physical, they're going to miss the other part that is actually needing to be addressed, needing to be incorporated into their lives or to be aware of that is also being utilized. I mean, one of the things that I believe strongly, and this is bringing out even more, is the experimentation that was done, experimentation, torture, all of the things that were really heinously done and are still happening to people in ritualistic settings and in government settings and things like that. The question is, and I think this comes into, like, what are the limits that a human, not a human mind, but that human spirit, it's that untouchable human spirit, because there is mind control, there is drugging, there is torture, there is splitting off, there are these physical things that can happen. But I think, honestly, that the reality is, in effort to get to that human spirit, that core of human soul, that core of human spirit, they realize, and it has been proven to them, and I think we all know this, you know, intrinsically, just within our own knowingness, you can't crush that. You can cage it, you can distract it, you can push it to the side, you can entrap it, you can drug it, you can split it, you can, you know, confuse, you can do a number of things. And that, I think, is what was going on and what they were able to prove through this human experimentation. Because in my opinion, humans are wild cards. This is where freedom of choice, and how is it that, you know, your perspective, we're all, you know, have a group of people and we're all witnessing a particular thing from our own perspective. It's the same thing, but we're witnessing it from a particular perspective. Yeah.
Let me jump in on one of the points you made about it being an experiment. Absolutely. Don't forget, it's an ongoing experiment. So one of the purposes of what they're doing with these totally ridiculous arbitrary rules that have no medical basis in fact, it's not airborne, it's not as deadly as the normal flu, and yet the whole country's going, the whole world's going hysterical as if we're all about to drop dead. The reason they're doing it in that way is to test to see if the control has taken effect on a large scale. It's they have to continually test their experiment to see, well, are they all lining up? Who isn't lining up? What are they doing? I mean, there are protests breaking out all over. There was a huge one in Minneapolis, in Paris, against quarantine and against the police state, and they're monitoring it right now to see who's doing it, how do we get around it. So they're continually, they do what they learn very well from Sun Tzu in The Art of War. He says you have to know your enemy by continually testing them, probing them, seeing their weaknesses. We're lackadaisical. We don't think we're even at war, and that's their advantage over us. They know they're at war, okay?
Against us. Well, we would be foolish, honestly, to not know that, to not actually think that we can't tap into ourselves and know ourselves.
Well, the point is people are in such deep denial that we're at war, that there is a war of extermination being conducted against the human race. They say, oh, you're paranoid, but I say, well, look at the hard evidence. It didn't just start against us. It's been happening to a lot of other people, and it's spreading to us. And I want to get into a little bit about Sun Tzu and how he says to operate. Now, one thing, and I'd like your thoughts about this too, people see Sun Tzu as basically a tactician about how to maneuver in war, and that's part of it, but there's a deeper spiritual meaning behind a lot of what he does. He talks about this thing called qi, and he says, whoever captures the qi of an opponent will win the battle, no matter how large your opponent is. And the qi, from reading of this, he's referring to the inner energy or spirit, the kind of overmind, the thing that guides people and institutions and nations, right? There's different names for that. But he says whoever captures the qi of an opponent will determine the outcome of the battle. And the way you capture the qi, one of the ways is you determine the battle. You set the terrain. You define the narrative. Now, up till now, the system has been saying, this is about a COVID virus. This is about everybody need to be quarantined and eventually vaccinated. And even the opposition is responding on their terms. They're saying, yeah, this is a police state. We can't have, you know, they're all referring to the virus, but they're not setting their own terrain, which would be to step back and say, wait a minute. No, it's not about a virus. You know, it's about something much bigger and older. It's about control, police state, our manipulation. And if we define it in those terms, we've taken their qi away. We proved that in Canada. We defined the issue for many years not as child abuse in residential schools, but genocide. And eventually the Prime Minister had to start using the word, and they had to admit genocide. You know, so if we have to define the terms and our own narrative and set the terrain of battle, and Sun Tzu says, once you've done that, you've won the battle before it's even begun. And unfortunately, they've won the battle right now because they're defining the terms. We have to start doing that.
You're right. We do. And that was one of the questions I wanted to ask you is, how do you define what the narrative is, what the playing field is? How do you, when they have set up something that really is, they've pretty much made the assumption, and they're showing us that they're making the assumption that no matter what it is that we want, their agenda is what is going to play out. It's whether we think anything different, they've created this agenda, and they are going to it's going to play out their way. And so the assumption is that we're just, you know, the people, as we, you know, we're just going to go, oh yeah, okay, well, show us what's next, show us what's next, and what's our next, you know, what do we need to do on this playing ground, instead of actually taking a step back and saying, just a minute, this needs to be reevaluated, and we do this individually. And then as we step up as you know, the individuals, like I said, I feel like humans are the wild cards. We are enlightened, and that chi within each of us cannot be controlled, but it can be distracted. And you know, here's the other thing we need to understand too. We, as these beings that have a chi, have an oversoul, have that spirit, that human light, we need to really be sovereign about how and where we are going to put it, and how easily we actually support the current agenda or the fear behind it, or how much we support a different vision, which would be our own, our own version of what we want to see, you know? And so the question is, how willing are we to have all of that dismantle, and how quickly?
Well, you know, it's the old thing about 80 to 90% of the people have no problem with going along because they've been conditioned to think that that's where their safety lies. And they always think in terms of safety, right? Mm-hmm. And that's easy to control. And as a matter of fact, the term used in, you know, medical science for vaccinating a population and making them supposedly immune to a disease, which isn't even true. That isn't what happens. But they call it herd immunity, H-E-R-D, herd. That's their term for the population, a herd. And that's how we're treated. Now, there's 5 to 10% who aren't like that, and they don't naturally go with a herd. They're different. And yet, those people as well are still caught up in the fear and the illusions about stuff. So it's really a question of what do we do to activate that minority? And again, bring in another principle of Sun Tzu. And, you know, it's never a majority of people who act. It's a minority that trigger the majority. And the example I use sometimes is in the biggest slave revolt in history, Spartacus in the first century BC, against Rome. It wasn't that the slaves rose up. It's that a group of gladiators, professionally trained soldiers, revolted, and they then liberated the slaves. And the slaves would come. They had an area around Mount Vesuvius where there was kind of like a liberated zone, as they call it in guerrilla warfare, where people lived among themselves. There was no other authority but them. They learned how to share, and they recovered themselves, and they unslaved themselves, and they fought and learned in battle how to act. But that only happened because that conscious minority activated them first, professional fighters. And that's who what we have to be. We veterans, and you're one of them, Deb. You know, you've been through this battle. You know what's involved. It's now a matter of equipping others and arming them. But we start with ourselves first. That's what we've got to focus on now. Everyone listening, you've got to focus on finding the few others like you and organize, you know. One arrow by itself can be broken. A bunch in a bundle can't be. And that's our perspective. We need to keep thinking in those group terms.
I think one of the best ways that we can do that is to take some very honest time and for self-evaluation. I think it's extremely, because, you know, knowing self is going to really clarify how you line up and who you line up with and where you proceed, where you go forward. I mean, in your example, the Spartacus example, it's really a good example. And at one point in my life, I would have very much been, you know, like I would have been identified with or identify with the those of the slaves. I would not have known myself as a gladiator. I would not have known how to lead. I would not have known how to be that example. However, I would have been part of that group that was like, well, teach me, you know, like I want this. I'm willing to be there. There is nothing wrong with identifying in that example as either the gladiator or as the slave or at any kind of dissenting right. that is, you know, of really knowing yourself. So if you can look at where you identify and being really honest, you don't have to tell everybody else. You just be very honest with yourself. Yeah, I'm a gladiator, and I am going to show people. I can show people. I can show by example, and then evaluate how you can do that. I mean, another, we're all so very conditioned from early on. You and I have talked about this before, about, you know, what might happen, who our authority figure is. You know, it starts out with the parents, and right. and then we move away, and we start assigning different factions as our authority figure, and so we'll pin it on the government, or we'll pin it on the law enforcement, or we'll pin it on something else instead of ourselves.
Well, and there's somebody who's always going to save us.
Well, and that, you know. And that's the hope, because we really don't know ourselves well enough or haven't been challenged to the point where that inner spirit shows up and says, oh, hell no, I'm stepping in now. This is what I'm going to do. And there's a real empowerment with that. There's a number of emotions that do come with that too. But, you know, I think if you look at how you're reacting to where you're pinning the authority right now, I mean, even social shaming, how are people going to look at me if I speak up? How are people going to, I mean, okay, even if you say that sentence, that's a social, you've given the authority to outside of yourself. Yeah. What were you going to say?
Well, here's the thing in response to that. Here's a really wonderful image to use, and it's from Marcus Aurelius in his Meditations. He says, your stance in life has to be that of a boxer, not someone who needs a weapon. Someone who needs a weapon has to pick it up, and then they fight. A boxer, all he has to do is clench his fist, and he can fight, because it's all within you. You don't need another
mm-hmm.
weapon.
It
the
is.
Weapon is you. It's within you. And so you just clench your fist and fight. And that's the image we use all the time of self-reliance. And it's kind of neat. Like in the American Revolution, it was preceded 20 or 30 years before that in something called the Great Awakening, which was a big spiritual revival movement all through America. And, mm-hmm. You know, it was about teaching people spiritual self-reliance. It said, we don't need bishops. We don't need kings or popes or anybody. We are the people of God in our congregation. That's what fueled the American Revolution, because people found that what you're talking about, the personal and the spiritual, are one. And the power mm-hmm. comes from us and doesn't come down to us from anybody.
Correct. And because we have been conditioned. Now, you started this whole thing out with saying, hey, you know what? This is actually a continuum. And that is another validation, another sense of proof that this is a continuum. We haven't been allowed
right.
that. We haven't been given that. It started, but it hasn't in the year that we're in right now. That is not the truth. What is the truth is we don't have that kind of liberty given. It's not just there. So we do need to find that in ourselves, definitely.
Right. Okay. So even the term liberty given, liberty is never given. Liberty is never taken away. Nobody is doing anything to us. We are doing it to ourselves. Okay. I haven't seen one cop arrest anybody or even heard about it. I hear rumors, but it's not happening because everybody is policing themselves. You know, mm-hmm. and the police themselves, right up to the point where they line up for the shot or the camp or wherever they end up. But we have to change our thinking to say, look, it's all in our hands. It'll stop tomorrow if enough of us just act. And this is the point. And this is really the whole spirit behind Sun Tzu. He said, it's in your own hands. It's never in anybody else's, right? And let's
right.
talk a little bit about that now in terms of what we do, not what the problem is, but again, some of our responses. Any, mm-hmm. I mean, you mentioned one. I mean, what do you do in a situation where people are shunning you or the cops say you have to stay in your home? I've got some things to say about that, but let me ask you first what any thoughts you
well,
have.
Well, I just think I'm very much about inner dialogue. If you're in agreement with well, when you're in agreement with certain statements that are outside of you, like, oh my gosh, what are people going to think of me? That is when you need to take it back in a little bit further. And even if you can shift your perspective, you and I were talking earlier, and it was fascinating how you pointed out, you know, we're afraid of even policing ourselves, that the policeman inside of ourselves, our own mind or our yep. own shaming. And where does that come? So how do we empower ourselves to own our own thoughts? And, you know, I really do feel like the self-evaluation is so important, because if you can look at this and you can see how you are separate from yourself, and this takes some work, and sometimes it pops up really blazingly, and you have to be okay to identify it and sit with that for a minute, or just own it and say, wow, I didn't realize that, and that's no more going to be this way. But how separate you are from your intuition, how separate you are from your belief system, you know, and what is that, you know, and where are you aligning? So that's, you know, my two, you know, where I'm thinking okay. is like, yeah, let's do some inner dialogue with this.
Right. So take that one piece and add to it, because here's an example. I've done these workshops, and I'm doing another one next week with some very enthusiastic people. And one of the first things we're going to address is our own personal power. And what do we do when we're confronted by a so-called authority figure, right? Because this is a lot of people's concerns and fears. And the thing mm-hmm. to understand is you're absolutely right, that recovering that personal sense. But don't forget, we're raised in an atomized culture where everything is about I, not we. So we don't really know what it's like in a group to find that power among ourselves, because we're very focused onto ourselves. So we need to use that self as an entry point to say, okay, but a group of people can do the same thing. And I've seen it happen. There was a time where, and a very, really incredible incident, and I've talked about it before, but it's worth rehashing, that we faced all the power of the state, the church, the state, confronting these churches about their crimes against children, their genocide. And we went in one day to this Catholic church, and the police showed up, and the people who, these were mostly Native people who are normally very cowed when cops show up, because they're beaten up and killed by them all the time. So naturally, you're going to kind of fear mm-hmm. back. Every one of those people stood firm and faced those cops down and said, we're not doing anything illegal. That Catholic church is the criminal body, raping and killing children still to this day. You are not going to help them, because that makes you an accessory. So back off. I remember Native people telling them that, because we had done an educational workshop of them. Here's what you say to the cops. You're an accessory to a crime. Back off. We're not doing anything wrong. They backed off. You know, it was amazing to watch, because we had wow. that sense of group unity, and we held together, we walked out, we were incredibly beautiful and united, because it just hit us that it wasn't just about our response, but individually, but what we do as a group. And that's what we want to foster now in people, that you've got to start identifying and work as a community. And that's how the bigger agenda is. What do we want in response to this corporate tyranny? We want a rebuilt democracy from the grassroots. We want our own common law republics. And that local common law assemblies and courts can issue these stand down orders. And that's what we plan to do. We're issuing notices to police who show up to try to enforce these regulations about the quarantine and that. It's a stand down order saying you are acting on behalf of a fraudulent authority. No court, no government has ever authorized any of these things, at least in Canada. The Canadian Parliament dissolved itself on the basis of 32 out of 338 members of Parliament. That's not even a quorum, so it's all illegal. And these corporate agencies like Health Canada are acting totally on their own authority. Well, hello, that gives them no authority over me, because I've never signed a contract with them. That's just the law. So back down. We're going to hand these issues. You know, as soon as they hand you a notice, you hand them a notice back, saying you're involved in a crime, back off, okay? And that gives us a great sense of power.
Mm-hmm. It does. So, I mean, it begs a couple of different questions as we're in this conversation. You know, one of the things that I want to ask you is, you know, why do you send the notices out? You mentioned something about, no, we're going to hand it back to them. So maybe if you could go a little further with that, you know, why do you notify people? How does that help others take their power back? What is this that you're actually demonstrating to others that are really unfamiliar with what you're familiar with,
right.
You know, the facts and the ability to actually stand and do what it is you're
yeah.
saying.
Well, it's an education process, and it comes down to words first, how words are being perverted, and they don't really reflect what they really mean. But an example is when you give a notice to somebody, you're really offering them a contract. It's just like what the police do when they stop you and say you've been speeding. Here's a ticket. You got to sign it. They're offering you a contract, because in a contract, there's an offer, there's an acceptance, and then there's some kind of exchange, and in some cases, money, right? So they mm-hmm. offer you a contract in the form of a driving ticket. You sign it. You've accepted the offer. Now you have to pay. All you have to say is, no, I'm not signing that. And they can't arrest you. They can't do anything. They can fine you, like they threaten to do to store owners now that don't, you know, quarantine or whatever, segregate people. But the point is, they're just talking out of their hat, because most cops don't even know the law. They're statute enforcers. And there's a really funny thing, actually. One of the top RCMP, Royal Canadian Mounted Police Commissioners in Canada, said a few years ago, well, we don't recruit Mounties on the basis of their intelligence. As a matter of fact, if they got too high in IQ, oh. we don't let them in. Which
wow.
I could be kind of like the model for every cop agency in the world, because these guys can't think too much because they're being used as a battering ram against democracy quite often, right? And so we educate the police, too. We say, come to our common law training workshops. Especially in the states, you can do that, because the county sheriffs are elected by you guys. We've done that in places in America. We educate the police about how they should, what they should and shouldn't be doing. If we don't accept their offer, they have no power over us. So in the present situation, we're dealing not with governments or lawful courts. They're all ruling by administrative law, which is you have to obey us or you go to jail, right? It's not due process anymore. And so these are all private corporations operating under the guise of government. When you're in a relationship with a private corporation, they have no authority over you unless you're in a contractual relationship, right? And if you haven't signed any contract or agreed even tacitly that you agree to this contract, they have no authority over you. They just rely on people's fear and ignorance. So a cop comes, he issues you an order, you issue him one back because you say, no, I'm not fighting you. I'm just not accepting your offer. I'm offering you something in return. So we turn the tables. It's like Sun Tzu says, you do this moral jujitsu, you turn their energy back on them and say, no, we are offering you a contract. We are offering you an opportunity to stand down from your role in this system and to join us. Here, you can be deputized as a common law officer. And it stops them in the tracks, because we've taken away their chi, like Sun Tzu says, and we've grabbed the chi back, right?
One of the things that you said, the word that you used was we educate them. Again, it's a perspective shift, and being given the lens through which to look by they who are going to provide you with the contracts is certainly not going to give you a broad view of any of it. It is going to be their view of it. And so for you to educate those and say, okay, so now we're going to give you another contract. We're going to have another offer here. Then that actually
right.
can really, that messes with the system, even the internal system, kind of like, hold on a minute. Now I've got to be responsible, yeah. or at least, you know, I've got to stay committed to this, or no, I actually want to consider this. It messes with the vibration. It really just causes, you know, like throws a wrench in the works. This smooth working, I'm going to, you know, process, all of a sudden you have somebody saying there's a different view here. And I think one of the ways that we can look at this, a very simple way that I have noticed for myself as I've been, you know, as I was going through my therapy and as I was looking around, you know, what was around me and who was around me, what I was pulling into my space. I mean, like attracts like. I was thinking about this today. I remember when I was younger, one of the things, ironically, that we did in elementary school, it was kind of a fun little science project, was playing with mercury. Mercury attracts itself to itself, so it was fascinating to have this mercury running around on the desk, and suddenly it all comes together, and you, even if you separate it, it comes back together, and it's a really clear yeah. indicator of how elements work and how energy works. You need to look at who it is that's around you. Who do you keep company with? And are you actually in agreement with that, you know? So then you can see, do I agree with these contracts? Do I really like this group that I'm with? Am I evolving beyond it? Do they, how am I showing up? How are they showing up? And again, it's giving yourself a different lens to look at instead of just being really complacent with the status quo and really buying into the fear. There are people who dish out fear all the time. And if that is what you're around and you, that's not who you are, step away.
Well, you know, it's funny.
That is a different way to look at it.
I remember when I used to do hospital ministry and I go in on cancer wards and older people are really old and really young kids have no fear of death. It's really neat to watch. It's the middle ground, the people who, you know, are a bit older and adults and they have expectations and all these dreams about life and what they want to do. But little kids and older people, they're closer to the source of reality, having been born or about to die, right? And they know that we're eternal souls. Nothing's going to happen to us. This is a veil of illusion. And the real death happens when you're separated from yourself. When you're separated from, people say separation, hell is separation from God in a biblical sense, right? But that same hell can exist on earth in people who have lost their substance and their connection to themselves. And you talked about the purpose of these experiments. It was to do exactly that. Find out how to separate people so that they feel robots.
Absolutely. That is the agenda right there. If anybody wants to know why, the big question mark in the sky over everyone's head, why would they do this? That is because of separation. They're going to separate you from yourself, from your God, from your own agenda, from your own mind, from your community, the more fractured a person can get. And I'll tell you, I was a fractured person. I know what it's like to have different parts of me. I know what it's like to actually work very hard to unify those parts, even mediate between those parts. I had sessions in therapy where I was actually mediating between parts of myself that loathed or didn't understand or didn't even know that the other part existed. And to work with that in a very real way was really kind of mind-blowing. And yet it was so, after the process, so empowering because the unification of me with me, suddenly I'm my own, I've got my own allies within myself, you know, and I don't feel separate. I don't feel crazy. I don't feel schizophrenic, but I'll tell you what, that is the reason, is to really separate people, to really fracture and to cause this chasm. Yes. That's the reason.
You know,
that's
the best thing
that
we can do, you know, what I do is I go down to the waterfall, I go sit on the ground and I'm fine. Doesn't matter what the worry, what the anxiety, all the threats, the fears, all that, it vanishes because I go back to my source. And they can't separate me from that source. And they can put a bullet through my head, but I won't agree to this vaccination or anything that's going to take away my liberty. I'm like the old lady throwing the pot at the British soldiers. Like, go ahead and bayonet me. Screw you, right?
Right.
And we all have that in us, right? And that's what they're afraid of. We unite on that basis, and they're gone. This whole tyranny is gone. And, you know, it's like Ben Franklin, after they signed the Constitution, he said, we've given you a republic if you can hold on to it, right?
Yeah.
Because that's why Tom Jefferson said, you need a revolution every 20 years, people, because otherwise you'll get fat and complacent and you lose a sense that the liberty is inside each one of us. We are the American Revolution or the Canadian Revolution or whatever, right?
Well, that is the truth. I mean, it is common knowledge to both sides. If you want to say there's, you know, dark side and light side, and there's, you know, really get specific about that. The human spirit is really what is at stake here. I mean, and there are those who have this big agenda that they're pushing right here, this heavier, darker agenda, and they are aware of those who are open to their own sovereignty, who are practiced at trusting themselves and going with these gut feelings. And that is what needs to be in balance. Those of us that are practicing this really need to go in and do the self-checks and really know what we stand for. And that's an evolutionary process. I mean, honestly, because the terrain changes. And so I'm sure that there's something that Sun Tzu says about, you know, setting, again, knowing what the terrain is or knowing yourself so you can see the terrain. I mean, there is something of value there. But even if all you do is you check in with your chi and you say, who am I? You know, what do I see in this? And where am I on this particular issue? I mean, you mentioned about how adamant you are about not having any of that. I would go to the desk before I would actually be vaccinated again. They've done that to me. I have been, they have put those things in me before, and I'll be, I will die before I allow that again. I will not, because I've been there. I have had that happen to me, and it will not happen to me again at all.
Right, and a lot of people believe that. I see anger everywhere now. You know, people write me all the time and say, look, I was just walking down the street, and somebody was saying, I'm so pissed off at this bullshit. You know, there's a lot of growing resistance at a very gut level in people to all of this, so there's a huge groundswell building. And a thought on what you were saying is, we find that not only within ourselves, we find it within a group. We evolve, mm-hmm. once people are acting together, they learn more. I love the old saying, you can learn more in a moment of action than you can in a month of study. Because going up against the system, going through an experience with people, I remember we used to do this after we occupied churches, we'd all sit around, you know, and smudge and say, well, what did we learn from there? You know, how do we grow? And like, that's invaluable to start acting together as a group. And that's what we're working towards, to create these forms where that can happen, these means. And I often say it's not even the issue that matters. You've got to start taking action and learning on the ground with each other.
Absolutely. And one of the groups, I have a number of groups actually, but that are very focused on working behind the scenes on this. It's in doing, you know, like really kind of commandeering some of that energy that's out there and shifting it and really working towards behind the scenes, working towards the vision of what we want to see, that in this case, if we want, you know, there have been a lot of groups that have been physically doing some things and energetically doing some things. There's a lot of people that are choosing to meditate and push really positive energy into the fear that is, you know, be with the virus and what's there. And so it makes a difference. I mean, you may not notice, but it could be a lot worse. But I know that there are millions of people that actually come together. And yet I am part of, I can think of three independent groups. They're groups independent of each other that I touch in with, or I actually unify with, and I'm doing my own work that are working behind the scenes in this very real energetic, because it is, it's both, just as you were saying, it is physical and it is a spiritual, thing that needs to come in balance. And
there'll be a shift. I mean, it's like the 100th monkey thing. We're reaching the point and suddenly it's going to shift, bang. And revolutions always happen that way in history. Like the week before, people were saying, oh, nothing's going to happen. And then bang, everything explodes because it's been simmering. And that's another point of Sun Tzu. He said, you've got to be like water around a rock. Any obstacle, keep moving. And you have to keep open. Like in any battle, there's suddenly a moment that appears of opportunity. And the true commander sees the opportunity and strikes hard and fast, bang. And the whole thing can then fall apart, even if you're outnumbered. And that's the lessons of battles again and again, that it's watching for those key moments and being flexible enough and not locked into a rigid way of thinking. Our principles are firm, but our tactics are supple all the time, right?
Supple, great word. I mean, there are times, and I'm going to take this into the spiritual, esoteric, you know, energetic space, where you can even kind of hit your wagon to the wrong train, really, if you start really getting involved in all of the news and really getting sucked into that, and then putting your energy into the oh no, but not recognizing it as such, you know, and then actually pulling back from that, you know, when the flexibility as far as being water around, as soon as that rock's in the way, being able to go around that and say, oh yeah, let me recheck this and let me work with what's going on, and then still send what I notice, instead of being really, like, I think as humans, I know as me, I'm going to speak about me, there I have a tendency to want to know the outcome so I can support the outcome, and we don't get that. Especially now, there's so much going on behind the scenes, so much going on in front of us, there's so much that is truth, some of it, you know, a lot of it is disinformation. Really being honoring of where we are in the moment of ourselves is going to work so powerfully. If I have an impression that my meditating in that, in the morning, maybe even taking some extra time with that, and then taking that and just kind of maybe even uttering what I would call a prayer, or being very kind to myself and getting very still for the day, and that's what the day called for, that's going to help. That actually lends some really powerful energy to it. And on top of that, if I am in that space and suddenly I get a phone call or an email and it is somebody saying, hey, you know what, this came across here and you know, these people we want to talk, let's do a conference call, let's gather somewhere, whatever, and that is what I'm called to, and my heart is right on top of that, and my intuition is saying, here's the next step. Then I work with that, and that wasn't in my day's plans, right? So it's that, okay, like what you were saying, supple and moving around the rock and still having the
right
same energetic focus that is really powerful.
Now, this is, it's very good the way we talk, because you're continually bringing back to the individual and the personal, and I'm relating it to the group and the collective, and we need that balance all the time in ourselves and in our work. So I just want to appreciate, you know, what we're doing here.
I think it's wonderful
now,
because
bring it together.
We do need to bring it together. It is very real, and it is very much the truth that the collective is what is going to really move this. In the collective, there are individuals. It can't, you know, as above, so below. It's the micro, it's the macro, but it is definitely the group. And coming together is essential. Just like you're saying, absolutely.
Right. Now,
and
we've got just over 5 minutes, Deb, and didn't mean to cut you off, but I wanted to kind of bring it back to a few things. I got a notice today about a thing that started out of the Minneapolis protests, and they're putting out a call all over the world to create a united opposition on the basis of 3 points. 1, no mandatory vaccinations. 2, defend and establish fundamental liberties. Like in America, that would be defend the Constitution. 3, uphold and establish the rule of law and due process. So the law, democracy, no mandatory vaccines. And on that basis, people can unite in this movement. And I'm putting that out there for everyone to start thinking about how you can enact that in your community, but also write to us, Republic of Canada, K-A-N-A-T-A, republicofcanada@gmail.com. One of the books, of many books we have available through Amazon, is the Whistleblower Training Manual and, most importantly, the Common Law Training Manual, which gives you outlines of how to organize these common law assemblies, the whole philosophy and practice of common law, and how it's innate and cannot be taken from us unless we surrender it. And we're not going to do that. So I have a final thing to do, but I just wanted to ask you if you have any final comments, Deb.
Yeah, wouldn't that be fantastic if all of these common law collections started happening all over the place? They took from the instructions that you've carefully put together on how to structure those things. Wouldn't that be amazing? Wouldn't that just be a lot of powerful people that come together in doing what it is that is already available to us? I think that's fantastic.
Well, that's what it's happening as we speak. And the important thing for everyone listening is to know that it's in your hands. You have that power and responsibility. Just act on it. And, you know, again, like just like they've been preparing, as we've talked about, they've been preparing this for a long time. We are preparing as well, gaining our consciousness back and our action. Just a final thing, too. The next week, we've got coming on the show a Canadian whistleblower, and this guy's the real deal. He was I won't say what his job was, but he worked on Parliament Hill in Ottawa, and he saw incredible corruption. He said, if I tell your listeners everything I know, they'd stop paying taxes tomorrow. They would no longer support this corrupt Canadian government. And this, I think, is a very relevant time for him to be coming on the air. So please tune in next Sunday, same time, same place, to hear where we stand. Deb, I want to thank you again, you know, for, again, your courage coming on. I know when it's personal, it's more risky than if it's just somebody talking in the abstract about an issue. So I want to thank you once again for your courage and wisdom in your words.
Thank you. Thank you, Kevin. I feel the same way about you. You're a great example, and it means a lot. So, yeah, thank you. I'm honored to be on. Thank you.
And just a final thought, here's another quote from Thomas Paine, writing during the American Revolution, an army of principles can penetrate where 1,000 soldiers cannot. So the power of taking the moral high ground, the power of our ideas can penetrate all of their barriers, all of their defenses, and we are fighting for the hearts and minds of the people running the system. Once they come over to us, the whole thing comes down. That's our objective. We're at war, people. And we have given you some of the ways to turn the tables personally and collectively, but this is an ongoing process. And like I say, get the book, follow us here every Sunday, 3 p.m. Pacific, and follow murderbydecree.com under ITCCS updates. There's important things there. Also, I couldn't help but resist. One of the things I'm going to start doing, Deb, is I'm going to start doing sermons because, you know, all the churches are closed, naturally, being good little puppets of the state. And the people who want to continue their faith communities, I figure it's time to start reaching out and activating them.
Doing
some spiritual reflections. But one image I want to leave with people is, in one of the readings after Easter is all the disciples are frightened because Jesus has just been murdered. And they're in this room with the doors locked in fear. Well, what does that sound like? They quarantine themselves. Suddenly, Jesus appears in the room. And he reassures them and said, look, you guys have a higher purpose now. My spirit's with you. Keep going. And he came through all the barriers. Suddenly, it doesn't matter what locked doors there were. The truth is that that truth gets to us behind all our barriers, personal ones, social ones, whatever. It cannot be kept out. And so when we take that to heart, we're empowered just the way they were to carry on in that spirit. So I kind of want to leave people that image. And just a prelude to other stuff we'll be presenting, our kind of online, I call it table talk, not a sermon, just it's a Martin Luther's old term for sermons, was table talk. You just sit around and talk over the table, right? Eat together. Very important.
I love that. So, no, it's very much. Can we take that and you know, chew on it? Actually, going off of that that visual. Yeah, I'm glad you're doing that. Thank you so much.
It's from the Gospel of John, which I don't like as much as Matthew, Mark, and Luke. But anyway, we'll get into that again. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. We're going to close on a really wonderful song called Bella Ciao. It was written during the Italian Resistance, and it's got more contemporary words, but I'll leave that message with you as well. Until next week, stay strong, stay clear. Contact us, republicofcanada@gmail.com. Carry it on, brothers and sisters. Thank you.